Aisha, and I'm a former host of Mocha Single Mothers by Choice, or SMCs. Like you, as an SMC, I decided to become a mother knowing I'd be the sole care provider and parent for my children, at least at the outset. The Mocha stood for Black, so I'm using the word Black, and I'll be discussing being a single mother by choice from a Black woman's lens. You'll connect with all the interesting and fun things about this non-traditional path, like discussing which sperm to use and some hard truths about fertility and the realities of dating as a single mother who doesn't have a co-parent to rely on occasionally, and what it's actually like to parent as an S&C. This is the Black Single Mothers by Choice podcast. So we are back with part two of the SMC's Parenting Queens episode, and we are going to kick this conversation off with consent. So we talk a lot about body autonomy in the group. We talk a lot about body rules. And as we move from primary school, younger ages into tweens, I think the conversation shifts a little bit in terms of how we talk about body autonomy, body rules. So let's get into this conversation about consent.
Yeah, definitely. I think now that Tate is going to be a teenager very soon, we have very frank conversations about consent, minding other people's space, but down to also if he sees something happening that he doesn't think should happen. If there's a girl that's drunk and somebody is videotaping her without her consent, then he needs to say something, that he needs, that nobody should touch, clearly no one should touch him, that he doesn't want to touch. And starting when he was younger, it was more about coaches and teachers and trying to help him understand, you know, when you're 7 or 8, that your teacher doesn't get to touch you, and just saying it in terms that he understood. But now it's definitely come into more of the sexual tones, and also understanding that he has to be mindful of what a girl would want or not want. And if he doesn't want to participate in something that a girl wants, just very frank conversations with him, but you're just being mindful of boundaries. And with videos, the parties and the drinking, all of those things, I think all of that comes under that big umbrella of consent for me. Now I'm just very open and very honest whenever the moment presents itself. From when he was about 9, he asked me, what does it mean to be raped? And he'd heard that on the playground at school. Wow. I don't understand how that came up. He explained to me why the little boy had asked. And I just asked him, what did they think it meant? And then I explained in 9-year-old terms what it actually meant. So from there, that really gave us a great springboard for consent that's lasted for the past 3 years.
Now, do you all think that there is a extra conversation we have to have with our Black children that about this issue that maybe white parents don't need to have?
Yes, absolutely. Being in a predominantly white region of the country, it's not even just my city. It's the entire, the Mountain West outside of Denver is very white. And I'm very concerned about some of those things, particularly another dynamic that we're living through today is the pandemic. And talking about consent or talking about space or whether or not to wear a mask, all sorts of things. And we have friends, my son being adopted, many people, I should say, most of the ones here, at least, who are single women who adopted, chose girls. So he has always been around a lot of girls. He's one of the few boys that we know who has almost as many female friends as he does male friends, and goes on play dates with them. And the dad will call and say she wants to know if he can go rollerblading. And I think normalizing being around girls has been incredibly helpful for him to actually think about how he cares for these girls who are his friends and wouldn't want anything to happen to them. We also have friends who are gender diverse, who either were experimenting or determined during this 2-year pandemic that it was the right time to come out. Pronouns have changed since the last time we saw a couple of kids. And so all of that, I think, has, he already is an empathetic kid, but I think it gave him an opportunity to say, hey, there are certain things you don't do. Now, he likes to touch me a lot. And I think I've been the biggest influence on please stop touching me. Kids like crawl all over you. Uh-huh. At some point, I just don't want him touching me anymore. So it started with me. And I think the other thing is that because I date, I also want to model for him how I should be treated and how he should treat other women. And so we oftentimes have conversations about how to treat women based on the people and influences in his life.
From an early age, she knows about her body. I talk to her about her body, like proper names, proper nails, everything. So she has learned since she was little, people shouldn't touch her. She doesn't want to hug, like even to the point where if you wanted to give her a hug when she was little and she said no, that was it. I don't care if you was grandma, grandpa, me even. And I do that with my son too. If I say, can I have a hug? And they say no, I say, okay. And I leave it at that. And no, and I'll see people guilt trip their kids and say, oh, why no? None of that. And I'll shut it down if I see it happen. Oh, I'm so and so. No, he said no, that's the end. And so she's learned that from when she was little, but I try to empower her and make her know her voice and she has choices and things, even little things like how I said earlier, how she said that she wished that she was donor conceived as well. Before I even came on here, I said, I'm going to be talking on a podcast. I'm going to be talking about you. Is that okay? She said, yes. I said, can I bring this up? She said, yes. If she does something funny, like when her brother does stuff funny, I post it on social media. When she does something funny, I ask her first, can I post this on mommy's page? Sure. And so I'm teaching her even stuff as small as like she has the right to say yes or no about those things. Can I post this picture? Can I post this video? Are you okay if I tell so-and-so this? That's what I do because I really want her to feel empowered to say yes or no when it comes to her body, things she wants, things she doesn't want. So that's what I'm doing. And I want her to feel heard. So I try to listen to her. And even as far as like when I'm making decisions about something, if it's something small and I can include her, I include her in decisions. So I want her to have a voice. Mm-hmm. So that's how I've been going about it. And I want her to extend that same courtesy to other people as well. If they say no, you have to stop. If they don't want to do this, you have to respect it. That's how we go about it.
See, that was going to be one of my questions. I have two questions for you. So you talk a lot, you talked about body autonomy as who gets to touch me, right? But do you also talk about who you get to touch? Because that's what I'm dealing with. Yeah. My 7-year-old. I think she has a full sense of autonomy over her own body. But we have a 2-year-old and then there's me. And like Joy said, it's the touch. And it's just, okay, the same body rules that apply to you apply to me and your sister, right? And I think you answered that question that you also have her, the rules apply to other people. Then secondly, do you start with the asking permission to post on social media? At what age did that start? Or was it always a part of your parenting routine?
I started it when, I feel like when she was maybe like 10 or 11, where stuff can embarrass her. Like my son, he doesn't care about anything he's for. But when I noticed like little things would be like embarrassing, and it's like, it's funny to me. Oh, you didn't do this today. That's funny. I would just ask real quick. Oh, this is a funny story. Do you mind if I share, or is it too embarrassing? And I'll say it that way so that she doesn't feel like pressure to say, oh yeah, go share. So I'm like, oh, is this too embarrassing? I thought this was funny. Or to try to, I give her an out. She usually says yes, because she's like, oh, with the flow type of kid. But if she ever said no, of course I would never post it or things like that. And I'm teaching her that. She's learning because she thinks her little brother is a toy still. So sometimes she'll make a video about him and I'm like, okay, don't post that. She's like, why? It's funny. And I'm like, because the internet is forever. Liam doesn't want that out there, I'm sure. So she's learning that. I think he's like really the only person where she's not giving him his autonomy yet because she feels like he's like a toy and he's her brother, but yeah. She's learning it. And I'm telling her like the same way he has to respect you, or if he were touching you, I make him stop. Like you have to stop as well. Mm-hmm. But I think the age gap has something to do with that too, because she's 8 years older than him. So she feels like she's another parent. But he'll tell her all the time, you're a kid too. You're just big.
My sister's 11 years younger and I always call her my sister baby. Interesting dynamic because she's like my sister and she's my best friend, but she's also like my baby too.
I wanted to delve into this because Joy mentioned it just briefly about dating and how you use dating to model positive, healthy relationships. So my question to the group is, do you date? And if you date, has that changed from when your kids were little to now being a tween?
Oh, I date, and it definitely has changed. When she was little, like somebody come to babysit her and I was going out, she didn't care or ask me where I was going. Now, if somebody's coming to babysit her and I'm going, where are you going? Who are you talking to on the phone? Who are you on FaceTime with? Why can't I get on the FaceTime? She knows it's someone that I'm dating if I won't let her pop her head in and say hi. Because anytime I'm on FaceTime, it's my mom or my sister or somebody, she can pop her head in and say hi. If I'm not letting her, why can't I pop my head in? So she's real inquisitive. Who's this person? And I usually just say, it's somebody you don't need to worry about right now. If it comes to time for you to worry, you'll know. And so she's really inquisitive. Do you like someone? So she tries to be in my business. Who's this person? Who's that person? She's in the business and she's aware. My son is oblivious, like how she used to be when she was little. But now that she's older, she's in the business.
Your kids put pressure on you at all to date? I've noticed that my little kids didn't care. But then as they've gotten older, I feel like the older one is like starting to pressure me. Why aren't you going out and like finding a boyfriend?
Son did when he was in kindergarten. I'll never forget. He was introducing me to the dads at drop-off. Oh. And I was like, man, is married. You can't introduce me to people like that. And it was cute and funny. But I think at that stage in his life, he felt like he wanted a dad. Mm. And that was how you got a dad. And I would say, I know you want a dad, but you having a dad means I have a husband and I don't want a husband. And it took him a long time, but he was really, and I'm also divorced. And he was also really upset that I had been married. And I said, they wouldn't have been your dad anyway. And he said, why didn't you have kids with them? And I said, because I was waiting for you. And that just shut down any more conversation about the dad part. I was dating someone when he was born. We were together for 2 years and then we stayed together for two more years after he was born. And that is his godfather. As a matter of fact, he and his girlfriend cooked me my birthday dinner. It was really nice on Sundays. He has a really great relationship. He is the constant. My parents, my grandparents are all gone. And so he is the constant in my son's life. And then I have a brother who's a nearby state that we visit a couple times a year. And because it's also important that he have Black role models. And that's been really tough out here to get, where it's just so white. And I don't have a problem with that. And we've created our own family. And most of the kids who are Black here were adopted by white families. That's been a bit of a challenge. At one point, he said he wanted a prettier mom. And I said, what would she look like? And he said, oh, she'd be white.
Oh, no, that is a lot to unpack there.
I mean, that's just sort of it. But back to the dating part specifically, he doesn't have a problem with whether I date or not. In fact, if I go long stretches without dating, he asks when I will start dating because he gets babysitters. He gets time away from me when I'm dating and he gets to do his own thing. Babysitters spoil him in ways that I don't spoil him. Yeah. So he did call me the man terminator once.
Oh my gosh. Kids are so mean.
Yeah. He called me because he was like, you always break up with the boyfriend. I don't have many because I don't introduce him to someone that I'm not in a relationship with. I've had a few relationships and they haven't lasted. And I explained to him that I have standards and that people, and that's true of him. You know, that you have to behave. So if you want a certain kind of woman, you need to behave in a certain kind of way, because women who have their stuff together aren't going to put up with men who don't. He needs to know that now, as far as I'm concerned.
So I am curious, and I'll direct this question at Jennifer. How are you handling the dynamics between other parents? I guess since your son is involved in a lot of sports and other activities, do you socialize with other parents? How is that relationship or those relationships? How have they been working out for you?
We went to a really small daycare and we did socialize quite a bit through the kids and sometimes by ourselves. Once he started elementary school, all of his sports were through the school. And so all of the parents were always at all the sporting events. And so we were always together, 29 boys in seventh grade. And we've never had more than 29 since kindergarten in the entire grade. So it's a very tight-knit group of families. But yes, so we did. It was always, the other day after the field trip, they went to San Antonio. One of the moms texted me and said, hey, Jennifer, can you pick up Ruslan from the field trip? So we've got that kind of relationship where we all have each other's contact information. With baseball and sports, I find it's a little bit different. Baseball is a dad sport. Times 100. I feel like softball for the girls is very much the same way.
Now, are there any single hot dads that are in the baseball situation?
I'm trying to think. Especially on our team now, there are no single dads. They're all married. And they all seem to take me under their wing. The coaches, I always feel like I'm very well taken care of. They all know that I am not a sports person. They all know that, yes, while I love the Astros, because I love George Springer because he's cute, not because of his baseball prowess. But they do. They shuffle me along, and the coaches are always, some people will probably say patronizing, but I feel like they take care of me and they take care of Tate. If I need something, they are always there. They are always willing to take him, to pick him up, to take him to an extra practice. It's been really nice. And then when the moms come, yeah, we hang out, and we're all going to Cooperstown this summer for the boys to go for a week.
That's awesome.
Oh, I'm so antisocial. It's like most of the moms I know, they know me. And I'm such an oversharer with people who know me that they knew how I was going to conceive my son. Like, I'm using this donor and I'm doing this. And so people know my dynamics. They know everything because I'm an oversharer, like I said. So it doesn't come up. And I'm just like, I'm social with who I know until I'm comfortable with you. And then if I'm comfortable with you, now you know all my business. So we navigate it, and it goes. I do find my sister and I tend to be the fun house, and we tend to let the other kids come to us versus letting our kids go to them. Cause I have a niece that's 2 weeks younger than my daughter, and they're like twins in their head and they're always together. That's why, as a matter of fact, she just left my house. So they have their birthday parties together. And so we know the parents, and the parents will send their kids to my house, to my sister's house. And it's always be kids at the houses because that's just what the kids do. So it's always tween girls everywhere.
I'm so not ready.
Lots of loud laughs and squeals and ewes and
drama.
Yes.
All right. So this has been great. If there was one piece of advice that you would like to share with moms of younger kids, SMCs of younger kids, what would be that one piece of advice?
I would say get used to listening to them and allowing them to talk to you so that they still feel comfortable talking to you when they get older. Like I said, my daughter tells me she'll overshare me to death. But I appreciate it because she's come to me with some like real doozies that I'm glad that she came to me to ask a question. And when one of the girls that she was actually friends with was being inappropriate, all the other kids didn't say anything. She came to me, she showed me the text messages. Look what this girl's saying, look what she's doing. And I shut it down. And I told the other parents, I think you might want to look in your kids' phones. And they're shocked, but I knew because she comes and she'll tell me, and she feels comfortable enough to tell me. She tells me when stuff makes her uncomfortable. When her friends say things that make her uncomfortable, people are making inappropriate jokes or anything like that. Like, she's really open and honest, but I fostered it since she was younger. So I'm saying, like, fostered that relationship younger, and it really pays off later on when I get older. Cause she knows she literally can come and tell me anything. And I've told her things like, too, I said, if it's something that's really serious and that you should be in trouble for, but it's super serious, you tell me, and there may not be any trouble involved, because I would rather you tell me versus get stuck somewhere like at a party or something and you don't want to call me and you're scared. So we have those kind of upper conversations and the scenarios and everything like that. So my advice is just foster those relationships while they're little so they still feel comfortable coming to you when they get older, and listen to them.
How about that? That was exactly what I was going to say. So I guess that really is the most important one, is communication and keeping the lines open. And even when they say shocking things, to not get upset, but try to like just say, oh my goodness, in your head, and breathe through it, and then follow up in a way with a tone that makes it welcoming. So they still come to you and ask you those questions, because there are a lot of sex questions that are coming up that I wouldn't imagine. And some of the things the tweens are saying, they know, they don't really know what they're talking about. And so I'm grateful to have the opportunity to get him to get the right information. But I guess secondary to that, I would say, encourage your child to be bold a little bit. So this is where us taking the bus somewhere just to have an adventure, going places that aren't unfamiliar to him. So he'll learn how to be in different environments without being absolutely terrified. We travel a lot out of the country and in the country. And I think that's been helpful for him to be able to navigate spaces that are unfamiliar to him. And that makes me really proud.
That's great. Jennifer, did you have anything to add?
I agree with what both Joy and Yana said about fostering that communication. And the same thing, I've told Tate the same thing. There's no place you can be that you can't call me 2 o'clock in the morning. I will come get you. You won't be in trouble. You've got to call me. The other thing I would always do to tell people, or always think, having done this on your own, when you're doing this on your own, you feel like you brought this on yourself, when you're struggling, when the chips are down and you're tired and you're scared and you just feel like, oh my gosh, what have I done? I can't possibly get Tate to baseball at 6 o'clock, see my patient at 6:15. I go take care of my dad at 7. You just got to ask for help. I just think that there are so many more people in this world that care than that don't care. No matter what the color of your skin is, no matter how much money you have, no matter what you do, there are people out there who will help. I have never run into the occasion where somebody hasn't been willing to step up and help me and give my family a hand when we need it. And in turn, I do the same for other families. And just love each other. Love your kid. Let them see you love them. Let them see them you love your family and your friends. And that village will come in shapes and forms that you never knew existed.
This has been such a great conversation. And I thank you all for coming back and joining us again for this part 2 of the Parenting Tweens episode. And that's it. Full Pod, thank you so much for taking the time to listen. If you like what you've heard, please share this podcast with your girlfriends, and I'd love to hear your thoughts about the topics covered in this episode. So email me at mochasmc@gmail.com. If you found value in the topics covered, consider making a donation using the link in the show notes below. Till next time, Pod. Bye now.